Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo. Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español. Marca Nacho Monreal. Pim pam pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gun and Blog. James, goodly morning to you.
Goodly morning to you too. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I mean, I'm fine.
That's fine.
That's good.
I mean, sometimes that's just the answer.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to be ashamed of in that.
Absolutely. There's no need to expand on anything. I'm just grand, I guess. And yourself?
Yeah, I mean, awkwardly, very similar.
Right.
I think it's just, you know... I suppose it's that thing when the football kind of goes fine, your mood is kind of fine.
Yeah, yeah. There's not much to say sometimes.
What, about the whole match? I mean, just, is that the end of the podcast?
About life, really. Just life in general.
Right, yeah.
No, I think we've got plenty to say about this match because it was, A, good to win, good to get another win on the road, and B, did I say A? Did I? Did I say A? Mm-hmm. This is an inauspicious start to this particular podcast. Anyway, following A, there comes B. And B, there were some team selection issues. There were some performance issues. Maybe performance issues could be C. And we can work our way through the alphabet of this game from the first whistle to the last, which saw Arsenal extend their unbeaten run and, James, go through November in Premier League terms without losing a game, which is interesting.
Ooh, that's interesting. Yeah, I hadn't actually noticed that myself. I mean, look, we did. There were a few draws in there, weren't there?
Mm-hmm.
Some of which were more welcome than others. But yeah, the unbeaten run goes on. I mean, it's not like this was a performance that was so convincing that suddenly it's like, oh, what a fantastic run we're on. You know, it does feel a little bit like we're kind of trundling through this unbeaten run as opposed to kind of galloping through it at this point.
But, yeah.
I mean, three points. It is a great result, definitely, against a team
sure.
who've been playing pretty well this season.
Yeah, excellent. I mean, it is an excellent result, but results and performances are two different things. And we can be happy with the result. We can also analyse and talk about their performance. I think this season, under Unai Emery, we've got a great big horse called luck. And we are riding it to within an inch of its life at times. We'll talk about that a bit later on because, you know, in the last 10 minutes, the 3 points we took could easily have been 1 point. But that's to come. But let's start with what Unai Emery did with his team selection. Yes,
how surprised were you? I mean, at this point, I am close to kind of giving up on predicting what Unai Emery is going to do with this team week to week. It is very, very difficult for us to get a real handle on it because he does seem to just adapt game by game.
Yeah, he does. I mean, I wasn't expecting a back three, to be honest, particularly because we've only got three centre-halves available and using them all in one game is maybe just a little bit risky when you're using all of your resources. Even someone like Nacho Monreal, who could fill in there, isn't available. Let me ask you this. Go on.
I was just going to say, I mean, it was apparently he's been injured, which I didn't even know, but Mohamed Elneny being back on the bench, maybe he was kind of the emergency cover.
He would have had to have been, yeah. There was nobody else.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, do you think that the back three, or the formation, you know, playing with three centre-halves and two wing-backs, was Emery's way of negating the threats he perceived Bournemouth to have, or the weakness in his defence at left-back in, say, Kolasinac, who looks far more comfortable as a wing-back, can give you plenty going forward, we know, and that formation at least allows you to offset some of the the weaknesses, I guess, or just the lack of effort that comes from Kolasinac when it comes to his defensive duties a lot of the time, which I have to say frustrate the shit out of me. Because it's one thing if a guy can't defend, but when somebody won't defend, I find that really annoying.
Yeah, I don't think Kolasinac is the only person who feels more comfortable when he's further away from our own goal. I think we probably all feel a bit more comfortable in that respect. He is a really weird player, and I'm sure we'll talk about him in more depth.
Well, let's talk about him now. Let's go on and talk about him now.
He's a really strange footballer, isn't he? I mean, I really would find it difficult to pin down exactly what it is he offers.
Well, I mean, we saw it yesterday. No, in the attacking third, he gets forward. He's got good control. He does like to drive into the box. He can produce a good final ball. We've seen him score goals. So in the final third, I think he's a player who offers you something. That's what he's good at. Anyway, as far as we know.
But he doesn't. It's not like he brings a great deal of continuity going forward. I mean, if you look at his passing numbers from yesterday, they're terrible. Down there.
Yeah.
I think it's something like
63% pass completion.
Yeah, and just for sort of contrast, for comparison, Hector Bellerin on the other side had 94% pass completion.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, it's just the vagaries of the wing-back position. It's impossible to have a decent pass completion in that area. You know, Bellerin shows that is entirely possible. So he's sort of like a battering ram, isn't he? Like an attacking battering ram that you can kind of play in on the overlap. And both our goals yesterday came from the same combination of Iwobi playing in Kolasinac to cross.
Mm.
So you don't wish to discount that entirely, but I've never seen a footballer who can look so fast going forward and so slow going back.
Yeah, but there's one reason why that happens, and it's because you don't care. You don't care enough to get back. You know, that can be the only reason. Because if you can bust your hole and sprint to get forward, either you're not fit enough to get back or you don't care enough to get back. And I can't believe that he's so unfit that he couldn't at least try at times. You know, go on.
No, I was just going to say, there was an instance yesterday I thought that summed it up perfectly. I mean, if you look at, for example, Bournemouth's equaliser, or any number of times they went forward, he's sort of not in the picture, you know. Not even really seemingly attempting to get back into position. But then there was an occasion in the second half where we were on an attacking break, and I think it was a two-man break forward with Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang. And suddenly this figure appeared from nowhere, and he sort of sprinted all the way into the opposition six-yard box. And I was like, who's making this incredible run the length of the pitch? And it was Kolasinac.
Mm.
And it just summed up how much more energy he seems to have going on the front foot than going backwards.
Yeah.
And it is this curious thing of having a defender who just doesn't seem to want to defend.
Yeah, it's maddening, to be honest. If you look at the replay of their goal, when it cuts to a shot from behind the goal, as the ball is being played to Josh King, Bellerin is trying his best to get back. Rob Holding has got two men to contend with. He's got the guy on the ball and then Josh King outside him. So he's trying to make up his mind how to deal with that. There's three players coming back. Torreira is on the halfway line. Aubameyang is just on the edge of the centre circle in their half. And bringing up the rear is Kolasinac, who basically stood there and walked out of their half. Maybe he wouldn't have got back. You know, it's a lot to say that he would have got back and into his left back position because his left wing back position to provide some defensive cover. But, you know, I just find the lack of effort difficult to contend with at times. You know, there were moments in the second half as well. Remember when they hit the post? In the build-up to that, there's a Bournemouth player has the ball out on the right-hand side, their right-hand side, and Kolasinac just doesn't close him down, makes a vague effort. You know the way when a player just kind of sticks a leg out, you know, vaguely to try and block across? Doesn't make any real effort to close him down or to close down the space. Eventually, the ball comes back to Bournemouth and they hit the posts. You know, it's simple things like that, which I think are bread and butter stuff for any defender worth their salt. And, you know, we can't ignore the contribution he made going forward. But I look at what he did defensively yesterday, and I look at the fact that Nacho Monreal is injured, and I look at the fact that we've got a North London derby on Sunday, and I worry that they're going to run him absolutely ragged. Because if they're watching Kolasinac, which I'm sure they are, then they're definitely going to target him. And I think the formation was used to try and at least offset some of that, because there were moments when holding covered for him. Xhaka was the last man back in the left-back position at times yesterday as well. So they're clearly aware there are issues there, but we just don't have any other choice other than maybe play Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
Yeah, I think that the formation, to go back to your original question, was largely designed to make up for the fact that we don't have Monreal at the moment. I think probably there are a couple of other factors. You know, the fact that Bournemouth have been playing with two strikers, which you don't get too often in the Premier League, maybe that, you know, Emery chose to sort of outnumber them with the centre-halves. But I think Kolasinac, or Monreal's absence, rather, was the biggest factor there.
Yeah.
I felt for Rob Holding at times because he had a hell of a job. You know, he was covering much of the left-hand side of the pitch. And, you know, at times it almost looked like he was playing as a left-back in a sort of back four because he was filling in behind Kolasinac so frequently. And I thought he actually had quite a difficult afternoon. But I thought that was understandable given the pressure he found himself under.
Yeah. I mean, there's an example of that as well in terms of the, if you look at the pass completion statistics, and normally Holding is very good. I think yesterday his pass completion was down at 74%, whereas the two other centre-halves, 87% and 94% for Mustafi and Socrates, respectively. I think the fact that Kolasinac was nowhere to be seen a lot of the time meant that Holding didn't have an option, you know.
Yeah, I also think that as the kind of left-sided centre-back in that role, he probably has to come up the field more than he'd usually be accustomed to. He found himself in sort of unfamiliar territory once or twice, sort of down the left wing. I mean, Monreal, the problem is that we don't have Monreal, and in some ways he would be, in this system, both our best left wing back and our best left-sided centre-back. And that's never going to be possible for him to play both those roles. So, I think sort of if we stick with this system, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how we make that work. Yeah. I personally don't necessarily see us sticking with it. I kind of feel like it was for this occasion because of the absentees, because of Emery's concerns about this one game. And I didn't find it massively convincing. I wasn't like, we're so much more secure like this.
No, I don't think so. But if he has those concerns going to Bournemouth, would he not share similar concerns for the Spurs game? I mean, it's weird, isn't it? If it is a case that he's playing a back three solely because he can't trust Kolasinac as a left back, it says a lot about our personnel and the way he's having to shift his team to try and cope with some flaws within it. But we had a slow start again, James. We don't tend to come out of the blocks very quickly. As we know, we're not really a first-half team. But Bournemouth maybe can feel a little bit aggrieved that they didn't take the lead. I thought it was offside at first, but then all the replays and the analysis afterwards shows that he was just onside.
Well, because Mustafi went to ground, right? I mean, ultimately, his... I know. He got quite far into it without bringing him up. But the fact that he is on the floor, it's his head and shoulders, isn't it? Essentially, pay Brooks onside. I think they have every right to feel aggrieved because, the goal should have stood. It's one of those where you can understand there's a bit of a melee in there, so you can kind of understand the linesman maybe making a mistake. But we definitely... That horse called luck came to the rescue, as it has many times.
Yes, it has. Look, and then I think we did okay-ish in the first half. It wasn't particularly convincing. Torreira hit the post with a good shot, didn't he? Not long after that. But, you know, we were huffing and puffing and, Iwobi was trying to make things happen. They didn't really happen. We did have a really good chance about 22, 23 minutes in with Aubameyang. After a corner, the ball came. He took a lovely touch on his chest and smashed it over the bar. I mean, I think he should score there.
Yeah, it's one of those where you sort of feel slightly churlish criticising because the touch to bring it under control was so good. But having done that, I also expected him to score. It was one of those where it's sort of you're not necessarily anticipating a chance, and then when it's gone by, you think, oh, actually, that was a very, very presentable opportunity. He doesn't miss... It's not like a terrible miss, because I can see what he's going for. He's going to just sort of lash it into that near top corner, and it's half a yard over the bar. But yeah, that was a decent opportunity. But fortunately, we got a lesson in finishing, really, from Jefferson Lerma.
Holy cow, what a finish that was.
I know, a dream of an own goal.
Oh my goodness. It was one of the best own goal finishes I think I've ever seen, ever. Mm. It was, I don't quite know what exactly he was doing. I guess he was trying to just lash it over the bar or just get something on the ball, but the connection was incredible. You know, you made the point, it was Iwobi playing Kolasinac down the left. He cut it back, a dangerous ball in, but I'm not sure really we can give a huge amount of, I don't want to say credit to Kolasinac or to our attacking play there. It was kind of a freak goal, wasn't it? Rather than, I mean, look, you get the ball in a dangerous area, something might happen, but it was more to do with the quality of the finish from Jefferson Lerma than anything else.
Yeah, and also I'm not sure the cross was particularly headed towards anyone in an Arsenal shirt. It was, granted, played into a dangerous area. Lerma must be just trying to cut it out, put the ball behind. I don't know, but the contact he gets is sensational, really. And I sort of had the perfect reaction to that of kind of cheering and laughing simultaneously, yeah, which is what you want from an own goal.
Yeah, I'm just going to watch it again here. Here's Kolasinac. No, it's a bad ball back. I think he's looking to find Iwobi. He plays it just to two defenders. Holy crap. I mean...
Keeper no chance.
I mean, keeper had no chance. Wow. He really did make a great connection with that. He didn't have a great game. I mean, he did hit the post late on for Bournemouth, actually, and nearly got something back for them. But, yeah. Let's see. Okay, so Torreira picks it up. Into Iwobi, into Kolasinac, not a great ball back. I guess he's looking for Mkhitaryan or Iwobi, but man, that's a fucking great finish. Probably the best goal we scored in, well, brilliant. Okay,
well, you couldn't do it if you tried, could you? I mean, it's one of those, you know, give them that 100 times, he wouldn't strike that ball so well.
He's flying through the air and off the ground, and he catches it with his toe. And wow, yeah, if you could do that at the other end of the pitch, you'd be very happy, very, very happy. So look, we're 1-0 up, and it looks as if we are going to get to halftime leading a game for the first time this season.
Oh no we don't.
I mean, what did you make of their goal and the way that we conceded possession high up the pitch? I mean, we were attacking. There was basically 10 seconds of the half to go. We lose the ball in their area. I mean, where do you think we should apportion blame here in a way? Because I'm not saying it's Iwobi's fault, really, because you lose the ball that high up the pitch, a lot of other stuff has got to happen for them to score. But when you've heard that there'll be 1 minute of added time, and you know you're right at the end of the half, is it not more sensible just to keep possession and keep the ball and take the lead into halftime rather than run the risk of losing the ball the way we did and for them to break and score an equaliser? I think experienced players really should just do better in that situation rather than try something that could potentially backfire. Just keep the ball, go in at halftime 1-0 up, and well, clearly that's not what we did. We did the other thing.
Yeah, the other thing, the thing that we prefer doing. I my take is a bit different. I think that the onus is more on someone like Kolasinac, or God forbid we criticise Lucas Torreira. I think there are other players in this team who maybe needed to be a bit cautious, a bit conservative in that moment in terms of their positioning. You know, we were caught really high up the pitch. I think it was like 7 Arsenal players were sort of, you know, in the last 30 yards of the field.
I'm looking here. There's a still just as Bournemouth are breaking. Iwobi's in their box. Mkhitaryan's in their box. Torreira is the furthest man forward. Kolasinac is stopping to have a little bit of a breather, cup of tea. maybe. Aubameyang is there as well. And it's Bellerin, who's just outside their box, who makes a big effort to try and get back.
Yeah, I mean, ludicrously on Sky, by the way. I don't know if you were watching the halftime coverage. But
no, I didn't watch halftime.
That Bellerin was who they singled out for criticism.
Really?
At halftime. They were like, his run back is wrong. He runs in a zigzag manner. Where if he were just ran in a straight line, he could get to the man. I was like, well, at least he's running back. What about the other four guys who are just like ahead of him up the pitch?
But yeah.
My issue is not really with Iwobi, because I think that we've seen this thing in the last few weeks of... we're back to A, by the way. We've gone back to A, so we've lost our sort of sequential order. Of Unai Emery saying, you know, Iwobi's blossoming, but he needs to take risks and have the confidence to take risks as an attacking creative player. And I sort of am inclined to agree with that. Basically, I think if a forward loses possession by trying to do something that's trying to create a goal in the opposition penalty box, I don't think they can be blamed for the concession of a goal at the other end. I think there's more onus on the rest of the team in that instance. I just think we were guilty collectively of poor game management.
Mm.
And I'm just reluctant to pin that on one guy's shoulders.
No.
I'm not suggesting that that's what you're doing, but I just, you know, when online you kind of see the vitriol. You know, I saw a lot of people labelling that goal as Alex Iwobi's fault, and I sort of feel like, well, your precious Lucas Torreira is playing number nine at that point, you know, and that's not his job. Iwobi is at least doing his job, which is to try and create something in the opposition penalty box.
Sure.
So it feels weird to hang him out to dry.
It was a very, if I dare say it, a very Wenger-esque goal for us to concede, wasn't it?
Yes, and it came at the end of a week in which we'd read stuff on the official website about how, you know, one of Emery's big focuses has been to make us more secure against the counter-attack. I mean, we were absolutely undone. And credit to Bournemouth. I mean, there's a lot that's good about the goal from their perspective, particularly the finish is sensational. It's as good as Lerma's at the other end. But we were really caught out. And it was, I think, infuriating because of the timing particularly, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Second half then, I was a bit surprised that we didn't get a halftime change. I thought maybe Henrik Mkhitaryan might make way for somebody, for Mesut Ozil, about whom we will undoubtedly talk a bit later on. I think we've probably got a question or two about Ozil, so we'll save the Ozil discussion for that. But Mkhitaryan, I thought, had a stinker of a first half, a stinker of a second half as well. Again, I sort of compared him to Theo Walcott on Twitter, and some people took real offense at this. I'm not sure whether they thought I was being insulting to Theo Walcott or to Henrik Mkhitaryan, but, you know, to me, the comparison is quite clear in that they're players capable of really exciting, top-quality moments, but when they play poorly, they really, really play poorly. And that was evident yesterday with Mkhitaryan, you know, the way he dribbled the ball out of touch a couple of times. His passing was off, as Walcott's has been at times. The finishing was off. You know, you think about that late break when Aubameyang played him in and he took a heavy touch and then kicked the ball off his own foot out for a goal kick.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't necessarily being disrespectful to either guy. It was just, that's who he reminds me of. And at times, I think I'd rather have Theo Walcott than Henrik Mkhitaryan, to be honest. He was poor. But anyway, second half, I thought we might change things. I thought we might change things because it wasn't really working from an attacking point of view. We had a chance. I think Aubameyang had another chance, which he blazed over the bar from the edge of the box. And it wasn't working, but then a little bit of quick thinking got us the second goal, the goal which ultimately turned out to be the winner.
Yeah, I also was expecting a change. And actually, it was Bournemouth who changed. I think they switched to a back three. And to be honest, I'm not sure it did them any favours. I actually thought that, you know, they probably had the better of the first half and less so in the second. I mean, the goal that we actually did score was a lovely goal. I mean, you know, really well constructed. I thought Alex Iwobi's pass, you know, his pass to Kolasinac for the first goal is sort of routine, but on the second goal, it's a really great ball.
Excellent.
With his left foot. And similarly from Kolasinac, it's a perfect cross. And that's, I guess, you know, the advantage of having Aubameyang through the middle. We know how predatory he can be in those situations, although he probably should have had more goals than he ended up with yesterday. But, you know, he tucks it away and that's that. And actually, I do think from that point on, I don't know, how comfortable did you feel after we were 2-1 ahead? Did you think we're going to see this out? I'd had a dream in the week. Did you know about that?
No.
I dreamt in the week that we were 2-1 up at Bournemouth. I was actually on the bench for Arsenal at the time, which thankfully I wasn't yesterday.
I'd have brought you on for Mkhitaryan even.
Thank you very much. I'm not even sure that's a compliment. But we conceded a last-minute equaliser in the dream. Yeah, to finish 2-2. So I was watching it thinking, oh, I've seen this play out before.
Yeah.
There were a couple of moments, but they didn't exert constant pressure.
No, they didn't. And I can't feel totally comfortable with a 2-1 lead away from home because of the just watching this team and watching these defenders and knowing that we still have this little appetite for self-destruction that runs through us. And we saw it at Crystal Palace, for example, where we conceded a penalty, and something like that wouldn't have surprised me yesterday. You know, I was worried about the space they were getting down the left-hand side. You know, we all have our worries about Mustafi. And there was a moment, obviously very late on, where I just don't have the free kick on the edge of the box. It's like there's three Arsenal players between that guy and the ball. Bellerin was there, Socrates was there. Socrates, who had blocked a shot with his face earlier on, and Xhaka were there, all standing in front of the guy who had the ball. I think Bellerin was closest, and he still made a lunge, went off his feet, and made a lunge. But look, that's you know, a different issue. To talk about how comfortable I felt, not that comfortable, but not as it wasn't as if they were making chance after chance after chance until we made changes. We brought Guendouzi on for Torreira. We brought Aaron Ramsey on them for Iwobi. And in the last 10 minutes, they had a chance with Junior Stanislas.
Yeah.
He made a bad connection on a toe poke, which if he'd made a good connection would definitely have been a goal because it was so close to goal. It was one of those who would have gone through defender's legs and the keeper would have just been rooted to the spot. They hit the post. There was another moment where they got clean through on goal. I think it was Stanislas again, clean through, went between Kolasinac and Holding. They played a ball in. Stanislas got in behind. I think it was Socrates again who made a really last-ditch kind of effort to get there, and the ball came to Leno and he got fouled. The guy jumped into him. And then there was the Leno save from Socrates. It would have been an own goal. So you look at what we did in the last 10 minutes after making the changes made us weaker. I know there's a natural momentum in a game where, you know, the side chasing a goal is going to put a bit more pressure on. But again, we got on our fucking horse and we rode the horse. We rode the goddamn horse.
I mean, a lucky manager can be a valuable thing. I wasn't massively on board with the changes that were made. I mean, taking Torreira off for Guendouzi, you know, I would have seen they would have had a few players ahead of Torreira to come off.
He explained that he'd been away and played two internationals, and maybe, you know, maybe there's something going on in terms of, you know, how they manage him, you know, how much they expected him to be able to do physically on the back of two internationals. So, you know, I guess we have to defer to his greater knowledge. But when you're taking off a player who is genuinely defensive minded most of the time, then it is a bit of a worry. I thought we might shore things up by taking Guendouzi on for Mkhitaryan, for example, would have been an option for me.
That's what I was thinking. And I would have had Mkhitaryan coming off, you know, probably earlier than Iwobi. Again, you don't know what the travel's been like. You don't know what the player's fitness is like underlying. But I was surprised by some of the changes, let's say. Also, you know, I know Mohamed Elneny isn't allowed to play in the Premier League, but potentially he was an option for a more conservative-minded midfielder. Look, we got away with it. I know sort of the XG for the game suggests that, you know, ultimately this was the correct outcome. I think Bournemouth had about 0.7 or something like that to our 1.6 or something like that. But, I mean, in terms of the way we saw it out, I was I think we're lucky. I think we're lucky to come away with 3 points in that game. I think it's one of those narrow margins games that could have gone one way or the other. We've seen a couple of those be draws in the last few weeks, and this one was a win. And I think we needed it, because I think another draw, even though that wouldn't have been a disastrous result, I just think it would have really slowed our momentum right down and sort of taken the wind out of the sails of this run. Whereas now, you know, I mean, I don't know a single Arsenal fan who gives two hoots about this Europa League game on Thursday. It's all about Sunday and the North London derby and a chance to go above Spurs.
Yeah. So, look, delighted with the win, delighted with the result. Good to get back to winning ways. 3 points. And yet again, we're sort of talking about the performance. I feel like, you know, in some ways, I don't quite know how to feel, actually. I'm really quite confused, James, about how to feel about what's going on at Arsenal under Unai Emery. I mean, I like the results. I like the fact that he's willing to change things tactically, even if I don't think yesterday it was particularly effective. Then again, you can say it is confusing. Everything is confusing. Kolasinac was terrible defensively, but was involved in our two goals. It's sort of like there's a yin and a yang in almost everything that we do. We're winning games and we're riding our luck and we're getting away with things, but at the end of the day, we're winning. And isn't that the most important thing? But can we not talk about the performances? Should we just stand there and go, hurrah, we're winning, and not think about the way that we're playing or the decisions that he's making in-game, before games, formations, team selections? I mean, we have to. So it's a weird... I feel weird because I don't quite know how to feel.
I think I've made this point on the podcast before, but the part of it is that we, without wishing to look backwards too much, we are accustomed to having a manager who obsessed about performance, and I think we now have one who obsesses more on results. And instead of, you know, under Arsene Wenger, there was always a sense of a bigger picture look at things. You know, we're looking ahead. What's the style of this team? What is the culture of this team? How does that play out over the course of a season? With Emery, either by necessity or by his very nature, it feels like there is a more microscopic view, which is, you know, how do I win this game?
Yeah.
How do I win this match? And ultimately, the focus is more on results than performance, because it's fundamentally a more short-term approach. So I think there is a sort of cultural shift that we're experiencing, which makes us feel a bit confused. However, I would also say you also have to listen to the coach, and he is saying all the time, this isn't good enough.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's just hot air. I think we have to hope that he recognises that. And he's saying, yes, we're getting results, but, you know, some of these draws should be wins. We need to perform better in the first halves. We need to control the games better than we do.
We need to defend better, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like he's in complete denial and saying, I'm a genius, everything's hunky-dory. So I think that we're right to be cautiously pleased with how it's going. Because ultimately, you have to be pleased with the results. You can't not enjoy an unbeaten run like this. But I do think it won't take long, will it? It would only take one or two defeats for people to say, well, look, these problems were there all along. By the way, I just hit myself in the face when I said, well.
How did you hit yourself in the face?
I sort of threw a hand out in gesture when I went, well, and it sort of went up in the air, hit me in the side of my face, my headphones, and made this noise, like that.
Right, okay. Well,
I'm like an Arsenal defender, you know, on this Arsenal team. It all seems to be going well. I'm making a cogent point, and then I just
hit yourself in the face. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is a new development. Self-harm during the podcast, causing yourself injury. Look, you know, I'm absolutely on board with the results. Do you know what's interesting? After 13 games last season, we had 25 points. And we were in fourth position. This season, we have 27 points and we're in fifth position, a point behind fourth. What exactly that tells us, I'm not quite sure.
It is interesting, but in the second half of last season is really when our away form, for example, just completely collapsed.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting to see. Because our away form has dramatically improved under Unai Emery. I think you have to give him that. And it'll be interesting to see if we can keep that going, you know, through this difficult Christmas period and beyond. I mean, looking at the league table, we're 1 point off the top four. We have an opportunity to go level on points with Spurs.
What's the goal difference situation there?
It's identical.
So a win would put us above
them. Go ahead.
Right.
That's right. And also, let's not forget, I think we also have to look in both directions. Manchester United dropped another couple of points at home against Crystal Palace, and we bought some ground on them, which I think could be really valuable.
Particularly as we're playing Manchester United next week.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was a really, really important result. And Bournemouth are, you know, they are in that clutch of teams along with sort of Watford and Everton who are kind of chasing the top six. You know, they're not too far away. So I do think it was a fantastic result, and I think it gives us a good platform. But the next couple of league games are massive.
They are. And, you know, you have to think about the way we've played in some games. I mean, Liverpool was really positive. Wolves was pretty terrible. And when you look at Wolves, they've lost four of their last five games. You know, that's a game at home that really we should have taken 3 points from, or you would expect us to take 3 points from. So, you know, while we can all be absolutely up for the unbeaten run and the result was really positive and everything yesterday, we can't be blind to some of the problems that we have. And, I, you know, and here's the thing. I don't think Unai Emery is necessarily blind to those problems either, because, as you say, he's been pointing them out himself. He's been referring to them in his interviews, in his post-match interviews, his pre-match interviews, the interview with Marca, you know, the talk about defensive focus and being absolutely determined to find a balance between the great attacking play that Arsenal are famed for or renowned for, but also a bit more parsimony when it comes to the chances we allow opposition and the goals that we let in. You know, we have conceded 16 goals in the Premier League this season, which is quite a lot, certainly much more than the top two, and the next two, Tottenham and Chelsea, have conceded 11 each. You know, so there is an issue there. So that's the positive, I think, you know, is that he isn't sort of glossing over these problems and saying, look, we won, don't worry about it. You know, the way Arsene Wenger would do sometimes after we'd lose, you know, we talk about character and spirit and mental strength and not really talk about the performances or the deficiencies that his team had, whereas Emery seems prepared to do that. So, you know, the fact that he will try things on a game-by-game basis is also his way of trying to address those issues. He hasn't quite found the solutions. That's why I think it's just a little bit worrying, is that he keeps trying different things and isn't really getting what he might want from them. You know, like, okay, let's try this. Like, we played the back three yesterday, and let's say it clicked and it worked really well defensively. He might say, okay, all right, I'm a bit light on center halves, but in terms of how it made the team balanced at the back, I can go for that again. Whereas yesterday we won the game, but the back three and the wing backs didn't really make us any more defensively secure, particularly down the left-hand side.
I know what you mean, but I think one of the big frustrations under the previous manager was that sense of whatever happens, it kind of feels like the same team in the same system being put out week after week. And after the Wolves game, you know, and that little run of draws, a lot of us looked at the squad and at Emery and said he needs to change things up here because this isn't quite right. And I do think, credit where it's due, he did at least try something, which was quite a bold move, really, not just switching to the back three, but also leaving out Mesut Ozil that we're going to come on to. And ultimately, he got the result. Now, I agree with you, it wasn't a convincing enough performance for it to be like, well, we found something here that we're going to stick with necessarily. But I do like how flexible he is prepared to be in his thinking.
Well, that's what I was saying. That's, you know, the sort of the positive aspect of our struggles, if you like, to find a cohesive system, is that he isn't just trying the same thing over and over again. So,
No, exactly. But similar performances, aren't they? Sort of similarly disjointed. So
Yeah, that's
the constant worry.
Okay. Well, look, will we take a break and then come back with an Ozil question and more? Is there anything else you want to touch on from yesterday? Was there anything that
No, not really. I was just thinking, I mean, annoying, I suppose, what happened in the Spurs-Chelsea game at the weekend, because I sort of went into that thinking, I reckon Chelsea could turn them over here and that could dent their confidence, but they got a really positive result, didn't they, Tottenham? So
they did.
Yeah. I mean, I just, that game looms very large in all my thoughts at the moment, but I doubt I'm alone in that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, look, we might, I'm sure we'll reference that because we do have this Europa League game. So we'll take a break here. We'll come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thearsblog. Just to remind you, if you fancy some extra listening, we started the Pastcast Extra last week on Patreon, which is really quite fun, where we podcast a game as if it's just happened, and we chose Arsenal 5, Middlesbrough 3 as our first episode. Lots of good feedback on it. It was good fun to do, James.
It was really good fun. Yeah, I mean, what a game to start with as well. Extraordinary match.
We do have another one coming up as well, which is the 2-1 win over Barcelona in the Champions League in 2011 when Andre Arshavin scored that particular goal. That's coming up. You can get access to that as well as a brand new episode of My Arse coming up tomorrow. With comedian, TV presenter, science book writer, and all-round good guy, Dara O'Brien. So if you fancy that, sign up at patreon.com/arsblog. You get access to all the extra content there, and it does help support everything that we do here on the website and keeps everything else nice and free. It costs £5 a month plus VAT if you're in the EU. It's patreon.com/arsblog. So let's get on with the questions. A lot of them about Mesut Ozil and his absence yesterday, James. I'm just trying to find the one that I had here. I can't find it. Have you got one there to
I've
hand?
I've got a few. I mean, Don Julio, who's at Don Julio AFC, said, how do you lot feel about Emery saying our highest paid player wasn't capable of playing because it was too demanding a game? And then bigger picture questions too from at Eggstino, who asks about if Ozil would have been given a contract under Raul and Sven if Gazidis hadn't been here. I don't know. So many questions about Mesut Ozil. I mean, it was the thing I found most extraordinary, and we will come on to those specific questions, but was that when the team came out, all the talk seemed to me was about the back three. It almost was like not a huge talking point that he wasn't playing. And I think that tells you something in itself.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Ozil being left out of an away game.
We've sort of grown accustomed to it.
It is an amazing thing for Emery to say that you can understand I need something different physically. But compounded it even for me, the fact that he left him out is maybe the biggest surprise, but the fact that he never brought him on, particularly, as we were looking for a goal in the second half, Mkhitaryan was dreadful all day. And, if he doesn't trust Mesut Ozil away from home at Bournemouth, can he play him away from home anywhere?
Yeah. By the way, Andrew, just to stop. So yeah. I can hear like a hum on this line that I couldn't hear before.
Right.
Like a kind of fan sound almost.
But. Yeah. You know what it is? Tell me if it gets louder. Tell me if it gets louder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're building next door.
Ah, right.
So
right.
It's sort of low in the background, so...
Yeah, yeah, no worries. So what did you say just
then? I said, like, if he can't play him at Bournemouth, can he play him anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, at home...
At home,
is that
of
the
course.
Answer?
Yeah, of course. But, you know, this is Bournemouth away. And look, I get that you want your team to be more defensively secure, or you want players who are perhaps a little more physical. Not that I think Mkhitaryan is particularly much of an improvement in terms of his defensive work than Ozil. You know, he can run, of course, but he's not particularly good in the tackle. He didn't really contribute a great deal in that yesterday. But you can be more secure by having the ball. You know, he can also be more secure by doing more with the ball. And I think Ozil would have given us a bit more craft. It would have given us a bit more penetration, perhaps. You know, some of the runs that Aubameyang was looking to make, Ozil could have been the guy to make the pass there. So, you know, he is trying to find a balance. He is looking for two players who can do something. Maybe he was looking for those two players to do what they did away at Fulham. You know, Ozil or Iwobi and Mkhitaryan were very good that day, but then everybody was good that day. It was a really good team performance, and we also played with two strikers rather than just one. So for me, it raises really big questions about what the future is for Mesut Ozil under Unai Emery, because if he doesn't fancy him, with all due respect to Bournemouth, to perform or to do a job away at a team who are going to finish mid-table at best, then... It really speaks to how he views what Ozil can contribute to this team. Yeah. I mean, maybe we're thinking too much about it. Maybe, as you said, this is a micro or a macro decision based on the fact he had to play a back three. He had no Lacazette. He wanted to do something specific for this game, but... It's still hard to get your head around, isn't it? That £350,000 a week player can't be trusted away from home against one of the league's smallest clubs.
Yeah, I think it still highlights something. You know, the fact that he essentially chose Iwobi and Mkhitaryan over Ozil, I think tells you a little bit about what he thinks of him as a player. And I also think, looking at the player's form, I mean, Ozil has not been great. I mean, there was that extraordinary Leicester game in which he was sensational, but I do feel like outside of that, he hasn't performed to the level that's expected of him. I do think that the big problem is that we are so committed to him financially. And, you know, I've seen a couple of questions come in saying, oh, would you sell Mesut Ozil in January? I don't think we can sell Mesut Ozil in January or anytime soon, because I can't see how anyone would contemplate paying him what we're paying him. So I do feel that there's a danger. I know he's a brilliant, talented player on his day, but there's a danger he becomes a bit of an albatross for Emery because, you know, ultimately he's sort of tied to him, isn't he?
Yeah. He is. And I think Arsenal Matt, who's at Arsenal Matt 1, says, do you think the Ozil $350,000 a week deal was connected to the Adidas deals because he's one of their main men? Mm. And his agent spoke very, even if I don't believe that he turned down £1 million a week from China, he spoke about the marketing aspect of Ozil's value, you know, his Twitter following and all those kind of things, which maybe shouldn't make any difference, but probably do in the grand scheme of things, because clubs have to think about branding and marketing and shirt sales and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, are Adidas going to be happy if we sell one of their biggest stars before they take over as our shirt manufacturers? Will that play a part in any decision that we make? You'd like to think that we would operate for purely football reasons. Maybe the other part of that is, you know, is Mesut Ozil's star on the wane from an Adidas point of view as well? He's still hugely popular. I mean, you can't say anything even vaguely negative about him on Twitter without a load of people jumping on you and trying to call you all kinds of names, you know, even if you're reasoned with your criticism or whatever it might be. But I think you're right. We're not getting anything like what we should be getting from Mesut Ozil this season. Again, whether that's down to him or whether it's down to Unai Emery not finding a way of accommodating him, or simply because Mesut Ozil is difficult to get into the kind of team that he wants. It's really awkward. It's becoming an awkward situation, isn't it?
Yeah. And I do feel like that's it. I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's that Ozil doesn't naturally fit into an Unai Emery-style team.
Mm.
And we're seeing that more often than not. And actually, I mean, it's not just Ozil. I mean, I was watching yesterday's game. I'm sure you were thinking the same. Looking at the wages that we're committing to Ozil and the wages that we've committed to Mkhitaryan as well, and thinking, well, that's a really troubling use of resource, isn't it? I mean, that's so much money tied up in those two contracts.
Yeah. You know, the only people who can be happy with that swap deal that we did in January are Alexis Sanchez and Henrik Mkhitaryan and their respective agents and managers. Because Manchester United can't be happy with what Sanchez has given them. And I'm not sure we can be that happy with what Mkhitaryan is giving us. I mean, he's capable of flashes and goals, but man, it's hard to watch. And like you say, people were critical of, like, Aaron Ramsey looking to double his wages. A story came out last week and Arsenal was sort of like, well, we make the decisions, blah, blah, blah. If you're Aaron Ramsey and you see Henrik Mkhitaryan on 220 grand a week, why the hell wouldn't you look for something similar to that? Because if that's the level of performance that 220,000 euros or pounds a week gets you, well, you know, he can surely feel like he contributed a bit more. You know, I think, and maybe people won't disagree, or people will say, there he goes again, he loves Aaron Ramsey, etc., etc. I think there's probably a good case to be made for using Aaron Ramsey in the North London Derby on Sunday on the right-hand side.
Oh, I absolutely agree. In fact, I think I had a question. Goonability said, given Mkhitaryan's form and Iwobi struggled to dominate from the right-hand side, is it worth giving Ramsey a run there, especially given his work rate, which may be needed in our tough upcoming fixtures?
Yeah, I would. He's played well there before. You remember that game we spanked Liverpool at home and he played from the right-hand side and was really good there. I remember a game as well against Chelsea away. I think maybe we'd come off the back of a heavy defeat and he had to play on the right-hand side. And, you know, he can play a disciplined game if he's told to play a disciplined game. Like, I don't think it's his position week in, week out, and you're not going to get that kind of discipline from him week in, week out, because he does want to get forward, he does want to get into the box. But if you ask me right now, against Spurs on Sunday, would I rather Mkhitaryan or Aaron Ramsey on the right-hand side? It'd be Aaron Ramsey. It definitely would be, because I just think Mkhitaryan is in terrible form. He doesn't look any closer to playing himself back into form. And Ramsey is a fairly big game player. Likes a goal against Spurs. Yeah. I think you work well enough with Bellerin. Gives us a bit more physicality. And, you know, I go for it. In the absence of any better option, I'd certainly go for it. But, you know, it really depends on how Emery sees Ramsey. Whether it's worth, you know, if he's thinking pragmatically about how to get a result. If this is the way he's going to operate, how do I get a result in this game? He's got to give serious consideration to Ramsey on the right on Sunday. So, but yes, it depends what he's going to do on Thursday. So,
yeah, and you know, just coming back to Mkhitaryan and Mesut Ozil, I mean, Ozil specifically. Do you think that this is a one-off? Like, do you expect Mesut Ozil, projecting forward a week to the North London Derby, one of our biggest games of the season? Do you expect him to be in that starting 11?
I don't know. I mean, I would, because it's a big game. It's at home. He's our biggest star, our highest paid player, a creative genius at times. So on that basis, yes, I would expect him to be in the team. However, if Emery doesn't view him as strong enough to play against a Bournemouth side, I know we were away and blah, 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 but Tottenham are going to be far more threatening at our place than Bournemouth were at theirs.
Absolutely.
So it's got to raise questions as to whether or not he's going to start.
Yeah. It's it's difficult to say, isn't it? Mm. I think he will because it's a home game, but that, isn't that mad? Isn't that mad that it's like, well, he can play in the home games?
Yeah. You know, £600,000 a week, practically, we're paying Ozil and Mkhitaryan. £600,000 a week. We're not getting anywhere close to what we should be getting for those kind of wages from either player.
No, and I think, you know, ultimately the decision about Aaron Ramsey to withdraw the contract off has been made because we've said, well, look, we've not got enough resource available.
Mm.
But I don't think it's a ludicrous thing to suggest that, you know, 250 grand or three of that 600 grand would probably be better spent on Aaron Ramsey at this point. I know that ship has sailed, but it does feel like we are wasting money there. It just feels like it's an exorbitant amount of money for not enough products, ultimately.
Mm. Okay, here is just sort of another little Ozil question. Tokyo Gunner says, would you be surprised if Emery includes Ozil in the squad on Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, we had a question on Facebook from Linus Widner, who said, how many first-team players would you send to Vorskla, who and why? So maybe we should
Let's pick a team, will we?
Yeah, I mean, would I send Mesut Ozil? I don't think I would, no, because I think I'd probably pick him on Sunday.
Yeah.
Because I certainly am not in a hurry to pick Mkhitaryan again. But he can't go, of course, can he? Am I right in saying that?
That's Azerbaijan, so he can go
to
Ukraine.
What I've done is just mixed up my nations.
You have,
so
indeed.
He can go to the Ukraine. If anyone can go to the Ukraine, because apparently the political situation there is...
Well, yeah, just as we speak on Monday morning, there's a story on the BBC saying that the Ukraine parliament is to decide whether or not to bring in martial law because of what's going on with Russia. Russia captured three of its navy ships, and there are obviously consequences to that. It's a major escalation, apparently. That's what they're calling it, between the two countries who have obviously... got some history there. So we'll have to wait and see whether anything affects the game on Thursday or not. But let's assume right now that the game is going to go ahead. What's your team? So you're going to start Petr Cech in goal.
I mean, if it was down to me, by the way, I would be sending as few players as possible.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm not sure. Unai Emery hasn't taken that approach at any point, has he, in this competition until now? Do you expect him to shift from that?
I think inevitably he's going to have to use a few players to give his team a bit of quality and experience. But I would be inclined to use as few as possible out there. He can't play a back three. You can't go to Ukraine and play a back three with our only three central defenders. So he's going to revert to a back four, I think.
But what fullbacks does he have available? I mean, is Lichtsteiner available?
I don't know.
If he is, then I guess it would be Lichtsteiner and Jenkinson or something like that.
Yeah, he's going to have to play Jenkinson, maybe on the right or the left. Who knows? There is a young guy, isn't there? Osei Tutu, who's just back from injury, so maybe... he could play a right back. But, centre halves, who do you play? I mean, I think Mustafi, simply because I wouldn't...
Maybe Mustafi and Holding.
Yeah.
Just because they're the most physically resilient, I guess, of the ones that we have.
Yeah.
He doesn't like to seem to give Socrates too many games in a row.
Yeah, I mean, Socrates did look a little rusty yesterday, didn't he?
What did you make of his performance? I thought he had some really good moments and then some really weird moments.
I thought his first half was full of wrestling, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was.
And there was that one instance where he just sort of completely abandoned the ball and like had his arms around it. I think he got booked for it.
Yeah.
You know the one I mean?
Yeah, I know the one. I mean, there was one where he safely shepherded the ball out of play, and it was like 50% strong defending, 50% a foul. And the referee, I think, just gave him the benefit of the doubt. You know, I don't know. It was a strange performance. I think he grew into the game, to be honest. He did grow into it, but he did look rusty in the first half, which you would expect because he's been out for a while and he did have a game for Greece. But, you know, the only other option I think we've got at centre-half is the young Spanish guy, Pleguezuelo.
Iggy, yeah.
Yeah, so he could be about the only other option that we've got at centre-half.
And I mean, he is an option, I suppose, yeah. Having played a game already this season in the Capital One Cup.
Yeah.
Carabao Cup, rather. Yeah. Sorry to the guys at Carabao, they'll be furious about that.
No free Carabao for you.
I know. Damn it. Sorry, guy. I would play him because I'm like,
yeah,
we need as many players fit for Spurs as possible. I would probably play him alongside Mustafi, so.
Yeah, okay, I could go with that. And then left back, whatever he's got available to him. Midfield, I think we're looking at Elneny. I presume Guendouzi.
Yep.
Maybe
Smith Rowe, maybe, is the most advanced.
Maybe Smith Rowe, yeah. I wouldn't play Aaron Ramsey on Thursday because I would use him in the North London Derby, but I have a feeling that Emery might. I mean, he used Maitland-Niles, didn't he? As a winger in the Carabao Cup. So he could play in one of the wide positions. Who else? I mean, who else is there?
For the wide positions,
yeah,
not many. I mean, I'm imagining that we're going to say Eddie Nketiah are up front.
Yeah, it's got to be Nketiah. I mean, he can't play. He'd be mad to play Aubameyang, I think. So Eddie Nketiah up front, and maybe somebody else in the attacking.
We're missing a forward, aren't we? Because we've got Nketiah, then Smith Rowe, maybe Maitland-Niles. We need one more.
Mm.
Genuinely, maybe I would play Mkhitaryan because I think he played himself out of the team for Sunday.
Yeah, yeah, he could play. I'd have no problem with that. We could bring somebody like Joe Willock in as well, and maybe play Smith Rowe as one of the front three.
Yeah, Joe Willock has apparently been very good.
Yeah.
In the youth team, so, and playing a little bit more advanced as well, I think, at times. So that could be one to look at. Mm. But yeah, I mean, whatever happens with Lacazette's fitness, I think it's got to be Nketiah. He came on for a minute, didn't he, at the weekend, and it sort of felt like that was Emery sort of saying, okay, you're going to get some playing time from now on. You know, you are part of the squad that we're going to require. I mean, we will require him, particularly in the Europa League, I think, at this point.
Mm. He's certainly got some thinking to do for this one because it's going to be a tough trip because it's a long way to Ukraine, and then I think there's a portion of the trip has to be made by road, so mm-hmm. It's not like we're flying into an airport and then getting a half an hour bus ride to the city centre to play a game. There's a fair bit of travel involved in that, and I think he's got to take that into account as well. Remember the last time he brought Mesut Ozil? Did Ozil play? I think he did play. He came on maybe in the game and then missed the Fulham game with a back injury. So, you know, he took Hector Bellerin, for example, all the way to Azerbaijan, didn't he? And then didn't even include him in the squad.
Yes.
So, you know, he's got to be really sensible about what he does. I know he's tried to maintain the idea that the Europa League games are somehow as competitive or as important as the Premier League games. But, you know, this is a North London derby against a Tottenham team playing pretty well at the moment, and we're going to have to seriously play our strongest, freshest team. I mean, that's another part of the Ozil decision as well, isn't it, from Sunday? He didn't do anything during the interlull because he's not playing for Germany. He had 2 weeks off, so he's absolutely fresh. So if Ozil doesn't play on Thursday, it'll be, what, 3 weeks without a game?
I mean, verging on rusty, you'd have to say, at that point.
Hmm. Yeah, stranger and stranger.
Yeah. And also, we've got a huge away game coming up at Manchester United.
Mm.
And you have to think, if Mesut Ozil's not trusted to play an away game at Bournemouth, he's got no chance of being involved at Old Trafford.
I guess, but maybe it depends on what way Emery thinks we can hurt United.
What he thinks United's plan is. You know, Bournemouth, you know, have a very particular approach, and maybe Emery's just tailoring to that. But it is a shift, isn't it? Because Ozil's gone from a player who, if fit, started every game to someone who's in and out. And, yeah, it does take some. It'll take some getting used to for him as much as anything.
Yeah. So Ozil's, if he doesn't play on Thursday, he'll go into the North London Derby on the 2nd of December, with his last game being on the 11th of November. So,
yeah.
Well, look,
it's just nice work if you can get it.
Absolutely. Absolutely, for that money. Okay, have you got a question? Or?
Yeah, this is just one from Ed, who's at J_Ed, who says, is Aubameyang doing enough in games, or is he doing exactly what we need him to? He seems fairly anonymous for 80 of the 90 minutes, but can pop up with an important goal on most occasions. And then there was another question about Aubameyang. Where's that gone? Hang on. Oh, yeah, John D. Barker, who said, Alba was good enough, but not good enough yesterday. He had some good service and missed a couple of sitters. Why is he so much more comfortable when Laka's playing with him? How can we create similar relationships in the team? I just wondered, you know, we've been waiting to see Aubameyang through the middle. We saw it yesterday. What did you make of it?
He scored the winning goal.
He did indeed.
Ultimately, he scored the winning goal. I mean, we had I had one here as well from MadWire1. At MadWire1, who says, I didn't rate Aubameyang's performance yesterday. Offers us nothing outside the penalty box. We've no identity up top. Passenger in brackets. It showed me why Lacazette has been chosen as first choice by the old and new manager and why Aubameyang struggles at sides. I think he means on the left-hand side. But I think that's the player he is. He's not going to be the focal point of your attack, like Olivier Giroud or even Lacazette to an extent. Lacazette gets much more involved and can be a player through which we combine and make sort of a focal point of the attack. He can bring others into play with his back to goal. That's what he can do. But what Aubameyang will do is finish. He's a finisher. He's a guy who'll get on the end of things. And ultimately yesterday, despite the fact he missed that chance in the first half, which I think he should have scored from, the second one probably should have done, at least got it on target anyway. But when the chance came, he was there on the end of it. And I'm trying to think who else in the team would have been on the end of that ball across from Kolasinac. Who else in the squad? That's not Lacazette's game, really, is it? You know, he doesn't attack the ball in the six-yard box like that.
No, it's not Iwobi's game.
It's not Iwobi. Maybe
Aaron Ramsey.
That's exactly it. I was just going to say, maybe Ramsey, because of the way he likes to get into the box. So if you're expecting Aubameyang to be more involved as a centre forward, or if you're expecting him to bring others into play and to hold the ball up and to do all that, then you're going to be disappointed. That's not what he does. What he does is what he did yesterday, and that's finish. Give him chances and he will score. He did that. But I mean, I do understand that if you're looking for more from a centre forward, his performances will frustrate you. I don't know that he necessarily plays better with Lacazette in the team either, does he? Is that an assertion we can make?
Not really. I think sometimes Arsenal look a bit better, but I think that's more to do with Lacazette than it is to do with Aubameyang. And I think your point about who else would have been in the box to score that goal is a good one. And I think that's partly why I like it when we get both Lacazette and Aubameyang on the field, because I don't think we have enough players in the starting 11 who are goal scorers. You know, when you look at Xhaka, Torreira, Iwobi, Mkhitaryan, Ozil, they're none of them predatory. You know, they're none of them guys who you'd necessarily say, oh, they'll... Maybe Mkhitaryan. You know, that's the one thing Mkhitaryan's got in his game that makes you think maybe he's worth persisting with. I mean, as poor as he was yesterday, he had 7 shots in the course of the game. So he does have a knack of...
He had
appearing.
7 shots?
Yeah.
Were any of them on target? One was on target. Yeah, I remember it as well. It was a little dribbly one that was really easy for the keeper.
But in terms of, like, cropping up in the box, I guess he has got a bit of a habit of being in decent positions. Of course, he's not really taking advantage of them. I don't think we have enough players like that. I don't think we have enough goal scorers in the team, basically. Aubameyang yesterday was exactly what you will get from Aubameyang if you play him at centre-forward. That is, I think, it. You know, he won't be massively involved, but he will get 2 or 3 chances in the game and probably score one. That's the player that we've bought.
And he won the game for us yesterday. His goal was the winning goal. He scored 10 goals this season. you can't argue with his goal scoring record, but you've got to be aware that he's not going to be the all-round player or the all-round center forward that some people would like him to be. That's just not who he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I have a question here. I did have a question, and now I've lost it. Okay, one second.
What was it about?
It was about the January transfer window. I'm just flicking through all my questions here. Okay, it's from Tom Woolsgrove, who is at Desmond_Dex. And he says, I give you the power, to sell three players guaranteed for their market value in January. Who do you choose?
Interesting. Three players guaranteed for their market value. And I suppose I can, presumably I can sort of then set about replacing them in that January window as well.
Yeah.
I would probably first choose Aaron Ramsey. And I only say that because he is going to go for nothing otherwise. And I find that so frustrating that if there was a way to extract something like his value for him at mm-hmm. this point, I would do it. So I would choose Aaron Ramsey first. Let me think. I'm going to discount Danny Welbeck. That would be an unfair pick because obviously he wouldn't pass a medical anywhere anyway.
Right.
I would probably then choose... I mean, I'm trying to not be too influenced by what I saw yesterday, but I'd probably choose Henrik Mkhitaryan because I feel like his pay packet could be invested in a superior manner.
And also, I feel like I would pick him as well, just to throw one in here. I'd pick him because I feel like the value he has will be decreasing quite quickly.
Yeah. fair. And then there's a few names in contention. Mm. Kolasinac is definitely on the list.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he's under a decent contract. He probably has some value left in him. If you're going to sell him, you should probably do it quick. Elneny would be on that list just because I don't think the manager really fancies him.
That's so, one of mine would be Elneny because we're not selling a player who is crucial in any way. He may have some market value. Again, a player whose value is going to be decreasing because he's not playing, and that just, you know, it really does affect the transfer fee. So he would be somebody who I would sell for whatever market value you would get for him. Now, I don't know what that is. Should I have a look and see what transfer market?
Oh, well, they decide, ultimately.
They decide what his transfer value is. Okay.
I think that might be my... Do you know what, actually? I think...
9 million.
Nine million, wow. Mm. I think that would be my three, which would be Ramsey, okay. Elneny and Mkhitaryan. But okay. Kolasinac is very close. Who would your three be?
My three would be Elneny, Mkhitaryan, who's got a transfer value of £31 million, apparently, according to Transfermarkt. I would definitely sell Mkhitaryan. And my other one would be Mustafi. I would sell Mustafi for his market value of £22.5 million.
That would be your best ever day.
That would be 22. That would be amazing. It's like, what's the story? The magic beans. Be like fucking selling magic beans to some cons. Yeah, I would, because I really feel, and I've written about this week, that what's apparent with what we've seen so far this season is that Unai Emery is really struggling to get his team more defensively secure. And I think we really need to invest in better personnel. I think he's going to be absolutely limited, hampered by the fact that he's got players who are always going to make a mistake or look like they can make a mistake. And Mustafi is one of those. So for £22.5 million, I think I would say, cheerio, Skodran. And I would tell Sven to get the hell out there and find me a goddamn centre-half who can goddamn defend. That's what I'd say. You've got £22.5 million. We've got rid of Mkhitaryan as well for £31 million. We've taken a load off the wage bill. Now go find me a goddamn centre-half. Goddamn Sven. That's what I'd say.
Just keep saying goddamn until something happens.
Damn it. Yeah.
I've got a question.
Okay.
Well, it's not me. It's not actually my question. It's Matt Prentice's. Oh, no, sorry, Matt Prentice. It's not your question. Oh, Matt Prentice, I apologise.
What was Matt Prentice's question?
Matt Prentice's question was, what was more frustrating, Kolasinac's defending or Mkhitaryan's attacking?
Yes.
You can see why I'd highlighted it, but I feel like we've covered that ground. But on the subject of left-backs, and I know we guessed on the Arsenal Vision podcast last week, and you spoke about potentially wanting a new left-back, and at Herbie Gooner says, do you think we need a defensive-minded left-back to balance Bellerin on the right, or is it best to have two equally attacking full-backs?
I would like to see somebody akin to Hector Bellerin on the left-hand side. I don't know who that is. I don't know that they have to be specifically just defensive, because I don't think that's the role of the fullback. I don't think that's the role of the fullback under Unai Emery either. You know, he wants his fullbacks to attack. They're an important part of the way he wants his teams to attack. So, obviously, one who can defend is really, really useful, because the one we have at the moment can't. And the one who can is injured, and even he's nearly 33 years of age, so we're going to have to think very strongly about bringing somebody new in. So I would be very surprised if our scouts weren't being sent all over the place to look at left-backs everywhere, across Europe and in England, of course. So, yeah, I don't think it's necessary to have one who can just defend. I think it's important to have one who can attack as well. So another Bellerin. Not that they're easy to find.
A left-footed Bellerin would be great. I agree. That's what I'd like. I think under Arsene Wenger, we sometimes had a sense of, oh, one fullback's more attacking than the other. You know, Cole and Lauren or whatever it was, Clichy and Sanya. I forget now. Yeah. But I feel like that's no longer necessarily the case, and that if you've got a decent midfield base, which I think we finally might have after a long time of waiting, you can afford to have two fullbacks who bomb on, as long as they do it sensibly. I'd love us to splash out and bring in a really exciting attacking left-back sooner rather than later.
Okay, I've got a question here. I just noticed this one. I was going to do just a final would you rather one, which I'll do, but this is a good question, actually. It's from Paulie Boy at P Fortunato 1985. And he says, is it possible that changing tactics for every opponent is giving the team too much to think about, hence the slow starts to games, rather than having a consistent plan / formation and slightly tweaking for each game instead?
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible, isn't it? That makes loads of sense. It's inevitable that if you, every game are given a load of new information, then you kind of have to kind of feel yourself into the match a bit.
I do wonder how much new information there is, because for the most part, we played the same formation this season, haven't we? I know we've done a back three a couple of times, but for the most part, it is kind of the same formation, just with different players. The Fulham game was a little bit of a tweak because we played that sort of hybrid 4-4-2 formation, which worked really well. We haven't seen that since, for some reason. But maybe it was one designed specifically for Fulham.
But do you think even if it's the same formation, like maybe the individual instructions are different based on it, every opponent? You know, that would seem to tally with what we hear about Emery. And I can see an argument that might make you a little less comfortable, a little less secure in the opening stages of a match than you otherwise would be if it was just go out and do your thing that you do.
Yeah.
That's a really good point, and not one that I had necessarily considered before.
Yeah, it could well be a factor. Could well be a factor. But again, you know, we're still so relatively early in the reign of Emery that it's just hard to know what's habit, what's kind of fundamental to his teams. Like, they put up the stats, didn't they, on Sky Sports yesterday about, you know, goals scored and what have you in the first half versus goals scored in the second half. And it's clear we are still a very, very much a second half team. We win games in the second half. That's what we do. Now, is that going to be the case throughout Unai Emery's Arsenal career? We don't know. We don't know if this is just a kind of aberration in the way that our results have gone because we haven't had enough games. So it is tough to figure things out.
It is, but I think that the question raises an interesting point. And one would hope that ultimately there are only so many variants on instructions that you're going to give a player. So essentially, that you know, there's plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D. And hopefully at some stage they become comfortable enough with those that you're able to settle into games quicker than they are at present.
Plus, I suppose in some ways as well, you have to, there's no question of a team being flawless, right?
No.
Every team, regardless of how well drilled they are going to make mistakes. I have a feeling that the Arsenal players this week are going to be watching the last 2 or 3 minutes of the first half against Bournemouth again, very closely.
Oh, and almost undoubtedly.
Right? And saying, okay, Alex Iwobi, you're in this position. Fair enough if you want to make something happen. But given it is just 20 seconds to the halftime whistle, does our left wing back need to be bombing into the box? Does our defensive midfielder in Lucas Torreira need to be the furthest man forward? You know, those kind of things where he can sit down and say, look, in these situations, this is what we do and this is how we manage them. And that's how we make an improvement. Okay, we've made a mistake, but let's learn from the mistake. That's where I want to see Emery really come into his own. I think that's probably what's gonna happen. So, look, we'll wait and see. Okay, final one, because we've been going a while now. Comes from Michael, who's at BL1NN. He says, would you rather be a reverse centaur or a reverse merman?
Right. So let's lay this out. So a reverse merman is the legs of a man.
Yeah.
And the torso and head
of a fish. Yeah.
A reverse centaur, again, I keep my legs.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. And what is a centaur? A goat?
No, a centaur is
a horse.
Body. Yeah, the upper body of a human and the lower body and legs of a horse. So a reverse centaur.
I was thinking of a fawn, guys.
Sorry,
everybody.
Yeah, you would essentially be BoJack Horseman.
Yes, Horseman. I think it's. I mean, neither's great. It's got to be the horse, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, would you have to go if around with
your... the presence of BoJack in popular culture means people would accept me a little quicker.
Yeah. Also, would you not have to go around with your head in a bowl of water or something all the time if you had the head of a fish? Because how could you breathe the air?
I'd have gills.
Yeah, you couldn't breathe the air, yeah.
And I'd do that thing... Any time I wasn't in a bowl of water, I'd do that thing a fish does when you take it out of water, where I'd just be like flapping. The top half of me would just be constantly... Yeah. I mean, also, fish are slimy and weird, aren't they?
Yeah. Horses are noble and majestic and strong and muscular and powerful and those kind of things.
Exactly. So... Whereas you would never use the word majestic to describe a fish, especially on land.
Very true. Very true. We've got that sorted. So we'd both go for the BoJack Horseman option there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather just be a normal centaur. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I'd rather be a centaur than a merman, I think.
Right. Yeah, I think I would too.
I basically don't want to live in the sea, if I can at all avoid it.
Yeah, you'd be just eating plastic all the time because of the pollution and stuff. You get poisoned.
Too right.
Yeah.
Too bloody right.
Whereas you could scamp around the forest... Would
if there
you?
Any forest left.
Yeah. Would you, if you were a centaur and you had a friend who really needed to get somewhere in a hurry, would you give him a lift on your back or would it feel weird?
I definitely would.
Yeah?
I almost offer that now in life, you know, just as like a piggyback service for people in need.
Short distances. Small people, short distances.
I definitely would.
Okay.
What's weird about a centaur, though, just for the record, is that it's not half and half. Like, a centaur's got six limbs. Because if you think about it, it's got the four legs of the horse, but then it's actually got the torso of a man just instead of a head. So that's weird, isn't it? Like, when we accept it, we're used to seeing centaurs. We're like, oh, there they are, the centaurs. But they have got six legs. Or six limbs, at least.
Six limbs, yeah.
Really, it should be, like, the back half of the horse, and then the front legs should be human arms.
Well, that'd be weird. But, I mean, the advantage, of course, is that you could do things while you're travelling long distances. You could be bringing your mate in a hurry to where he needed to go, but also you could check your phone, you could knit, you could do the crossword.
I guess, but I think centaurs, if centaurs existed, they wouldn't be allowed to check their phones because it would cause loads of accidents.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not when you're driving.
You've got to be parked. I don't know, exactly. I don't know what they would do with their arms when they're running really fast. They're normally like firing bows and stuff like that,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, war creatures. Anyway, look, we'll leave it there. Thank you as ever for listening. We will be back on Friday, actually, because there is a Europa League game on Thursday night. So we will do an Arscast Extra on Friday, in which we will review the game against Vorskla, but also look ahead in some seriousness to the North London Derby on Sunday, based on what Emery does on Thursday, the team he picks and what team he might pick and everything else. So please join us for that. Thanks as ever, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.